All croakers pack in sooner or later. One day, when Roy came for his script, the doctor told him, "This is positively the last, and you guys had better keep out of sight. The inspector was around to see me yesterday. He has all the RXs I wrote for you guys. He told me I'll lose my license if I write any more, so I'm going to date this one back. Tell the druggist you were too sick yesterday to cash it. You guys gave some wrong addresses on those scripts. That's a violation of Public Health Law 334, so don't say I didn't warn you. For God's sake, cover up for me if they question you. This could mean my whole professional career. You know, I've always been right with you boys. I wanted to stop months ago. I just couldn't leave you guys stranded, so give me a break. Here's the script, and don't come back." Roy went back the next day. The doctor's brother-in-law was there to protect the family honor. He grabbed Roy by the coat collar and the back of the belt and threw him out onto the sidewalk. "The next time I find you around here bothering the doctor," he said, "you won't be in a condition to walk away." 10 minutes later, Herman arrived. The brother-in-law was giving him the same treatment when Herman pulled out a silk dress he had under his coat. As I recall, somebody unloaded a batch of hot dresses on us for 3 grains of morphine, and turning to the doctor's wife, who had come downstairs to see what all the commotion was about, he said, "I thought you might like this dress." So we got a chance to talk to the doctor, who wrote him one last script. It took him 3 hours to fill it. Our regular drugstore had been warned by the inspector, and they would not fill any more scripts. "You guys had better keep out of sight," the proprietor said. "I think the inspector has warrants out for all of you." Our croaker had packed in. We split up to comb the city. We covered Brooklyn, the Bronx, Queens, Jersey City, and Newark. We couldn't even score for Pantapon. It seemed like the doctors were all expecting us, just waiting for one of us to walk into the office so they could say absolutely no. It was as though every doctor in Greater New York had suddenly taken a pledge to never write another narcotics script. We were running out of junk. Patently, we would be immobilized in a matter of hours. Roy decided to throw in the towel and go to Rikers Island for the 30-day cure. This is not a reduction cure. They don't give any junk, not even a sleeping tablet. All they offer the addict is 30 days detention. The place is always full. Herman got picked up in the Bronx while he was looking for a croaker. No definite charge, just 2 detectives didn't like his looks. When they got him downtown, they found out the narcotics squad had a warrant for him sworn out by the state inspector. The charge was wrong address on a narcotics script. Some wagon-chasing lawyer called me up and asked if I would put up the money to buy Herman a bond. I sent $2 for cigarettes instead. If a man is going to do time, he might as well start doing it. I was all out of junk at this point and had double-boiled my last cottons. Junk is cooked up in a spoon and sucked into the dropper through a little piece of cotton to get it all out of the spoon. Some of the solution stays in the cotton, and addicts save these cottons for emergencies. I got a codeine script from an old doctor by putting down a story about migraine headaches. Codeine is better than nothing, and 5 grains in the skin will keep you from being sick. For some reason, it is dangerous to shoot codeine in the vein. I recall one night Herman and I were caught short with nothing but some codeine sulfate. Herman cooked up first and shot 1 grain in the vein. Immediately he turned very red, then very pale. He sat down weakly on the bed. "My God," he said. "What's the matter?" I asked. "It's perfectly all right." He gave me a sour look. "All right, is it? Well, you shoot some then." I cooked up a grain and got out my works ready to take the shot. Herman watched me eagerly. He was sitting on the bed. As soon as I took the needle out of my arm, I felt an intense and most unpleasant prickling sensation entirely different from the prickles you get from a good shot of morphine. I could feel my face swelling. I sat down on the bed next to Herman. My fingers were puffed up double size.
"Well," said Herman. "Is it all right?"
"No," I said. My lips were numb like I'd been hit across the mouth. I had a terrific headache. I began to pace up and down the room since I had a vague theory that if I got the circulation going, the blood would carry away the codeine. After an hour, I felt a little better and went to bed. Herman told me about a partner of his who passed out and turned blue after a shot of codeine. I put him under a cold shower and he came around. "Why didn't you tell me that before?" I demanded. Herman was suddenly and unaccountably irritated. The sources of his anger were generally unfathomable.
"Well," he began, "you have to expect to take some chances when you're using junk. Besides, just because one person has a certain reaction doesn't necessarily mean that someone else will react in the same way. You seem so sure it was all right. I didn't want to bug you by bringing anything up.